Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, it's been a few weeks since we've all been together. And despite having 3 weeks to think about it, we didn't come up with anything to talk about today except listeners suggested topics. But we have some good ones on tap, including something about your dad pipe. People love it when we talk about your dad. Something about Theo Bros. And we'll get to all that after this quick break. All right, we're back. You know that if something gets to me via text, it's already gotten to everybody else like a week earlier, but I had somebody text me, Pipe, a link to a video of your dad preaching a sermon, gesticulating wildly during the sermon as he is wont to do, and then his Apple Watch going off because it thought that he was in an accident. And there are many directions to take this. His reaction was perfect. He played it for laughs. He was in control of the moment, which was kind of fun. But it sort of speaks to the technology part of our lives. It speaks to the technology part of pastors' lives. And it was just a good John Piper moment. It was a good reminder, hey, everybody, John Piper still exists, still out there doing his thing. What was your experience with this, Pipe? And sub question, how do you feel when people text you or share things about your dad? Like, do you get sick of it? Are you like, ah, again? Where are you at on either of those things?
So my experience with it, we were up in Minnesota over Christmas, and so spent it with my parents. And so I heard about it from the source first. You know, my dad was just chuckling and sort of making fun of himself. You know, this ridiculous thing happened, and he's kind of shook his head. And my comment was, man, I hope there's video of that. That would be hilarious. And then like 5 days later, it starts pinging all over, you know, Christian social media, and people are amused by it. And I love that it was just amusing. You know, it wasn't one of like, there is nothing controversial about this. It's very rare that we get a pastor moment.
Exactly.
That's just fun. Like there's no, you know, I guess we could probably spin this into like, boy, did he handle that in a redemptive way, but let's not ruin the fun. Like it was just a lighthearted moment. The second question, how do I feel when people text me this? There's always a sense of dread. Hey, did you see what your dad ... And the answer is, oh no. Oh no. What has happened now? Not because he's going to do anything to like shame himself, but just what controversy has he been embroiled in? Has he commented on? What did somebody say about him that I'm expected to have an opinion about? Those kinds of things. So when it was this, it was just this great sense of like relief, and it increased my enjoyment of the moment.
Oh, I love it. So when there's a controversy, like a fresh controversy, what's the timetable? Do you know that you're looking at like 2 to 3 days of angry, hostile tweets and people texting and just crap that you have to deal with? Or how long does it typically last?
This is one of those areas where I'm a lot more like you. I get it on the back. Like everybody else has been pissed about something for 48 hours before I know it exists. Cause this is going to sound more disrespectful than I intended to be. I don't pay attention to what my dad does. You know, I don't follow Desiring God's website. You know, there are those who are sort of tracking him either because they love him or because they love to try to catch him and saying something they don't like. And I don't pay attention to it. So, I miss all that stuff, and I pretty intentionally try to mute, a lot of the more reactive people. So that that stuff just doesn't enter my feed. So I'm a lot more like you. That's like, once it's made it to me, I'm like, oh, I don't even want to read the comments on this. I know that there are just pages of people defending him and, you know, harassing him and
right
and whatever. This was one that, you know, by the time it came to me via text, I was like, oh, there's no controversy about this. This is good. We survived.
Awesome.
It's all good. Just fun.
Yeah. Okay. I've got Apple Watch questions for both of you as pastors. Baby, do you preach in an Apple Watch?
I don't own one. I don't even have one.
I don't have one either, dude.
Yeah.
Why do you not have that? You seem like a guy who enjoys collecting tech. Like, why no Apple Watch?
I mean, I don't really collect tech, and I've never worn a watch. And so, I actually like watches. I like the way they look.
Yeah.
But they bother me, and I've never been able to adapt to having that thing hanging on my wrist. But I like I just bought this like kind of this reissue kind of vintagey 1930s kind of like watch design thing that I found. I just bought it because I liked it. I'll probably wear it like twice this year, but it's more of an accessory, not because I need to know the time like everybody else.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Me and Big M talked about should we get the Apple Watch? Like, is that going to enhance our lives? And we're just looking at each other, making hand motions, going, "Yeah, I think that's our answer." I don't know. We just don't have one. We never got one.
Way to talk about it as a couple, though. That's good. That's good marriage stuff for sure. Now, what are you up there on the podium with when you preach? Are you going off an iPad or like analog notes or what are we looking at up there?
Yeah, I print it out. So I just, okay. I have my piece. I only do one piece of paper. So it's, it's just one sheet of very thick, beautiful white blank paper with my notes on it.
Oh, nice. Piper, what do you do? Are you a notes guy, an iPad guy?
Apple Watch?
I don't have an Apple Watch. I had one for a few years, and I realized I only used it for the fitness side of it, and everything else about it I hated. It kept, because it was the rudest thing, or it made me rude. You know, it would buzz with a text.
100%.
And so I would look at my watch while talking to somebody else, and nothing gives the signal of I want to get out of here more than looking at your watch. And so I was like, this is not. So I just switched to the Fitbit because I only want it for helping me keep track of fitness and calories and those kinds of things. And that's all the Fitbit does. So, it's a watch too, but it works better for me.
Well, Pipe, that was our, I mean, if I can cut in, like that was our motivation at the end of the day is that it's one of those distracting things where like a phone, like you can just leave your phone in your bag or you can turn it upside down, which I'll do a lot of times,
right.
Just kind of shove it out of the way on the table or if I'm, you know, at a restaurant or something, that's kind of typically what I do, or I just keep it in my bag. But like the watch thing, you can't escape. And then, you experience that whole thing where a guy has one eye on you and one eye on his watch the whole time. And I'm like, I just don't want to be that guy, you know?
Yeah, totally. I have gesticulating wildly questions for the two of you as pastors. where are you both at on the like wild gesticulation spectrum? Like 10 being... 10 being you're about to take off and fly due to all the arm flapping, and 1 being like, you know, somebody's taking your pulse because you haven't moved in 6 minutes.
I have a sub question. This is specifically for Ronnie because of all, you know, we have spent millions of words on one another and been in the same place several times, but never in a preaching context that I can recall. So I've never seen Ronnie preach. So the sub question is, how many steps do you take when you preach? Are you like a stay at the podium? Are you a pace the whole stage? Are you like 2 steps on either side of the podium? Does it change whether it's like preaching or like giving a talk at a conference? I have lots of questions about this, but so let's go full body motion, Ronnie. What is your mobility on stage as you preach and present?
Yeah, I tend to cover about like a 4 to 5 foot range where I kind of go back and forth.
Okay.
I'm uncomfortable just standing there because I am very movie and I'm super like moving. So if I just let myself go without any thought, I mean, I look like a maniac up there, because I'm so expressive in how I talk and I pull using hand motions helps me pull the thoughts out of me. It helps me think better, but I also don't want to be that crazy dude. So I'm always like trying to moderate that so that it's not distracting, so that everybody's, because you can tell you're looking down and you see people that have this mild smirk on their face. And it's like, oh, that it's not because you said something funny or amazing. It's because you are literally talking like a maniac up on the platform.
Yeah. You're caricaturing yourself.
You are. And it's funny because I'm not necessarily bothered by guys like your dad who do that. I don't even think much about it, but I'm super aware of it in myself, and it really bothers me that I'm overly expressive like that. So here's the rub. I'm always trying to put a lid on it, And then those weeks where I'm super conscious of it and I'm trying to put an extra heavy lid on it, then I'm just not being myself and everything else suffers. So at some point it's just like, dude, just do what you do and quit overthinking. I don't know.
Piper, he's got 4 to 5 foot range. He's like Rudy Gobert.
I am exactly like Rudy Gobert. That's exactly what I was going to say. Exactly,
but man, his field goal percentage inside of 5 feet.
Oh, dude, it's
league leading.
It's like 71% on the A to B.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is 71% is about what Rudy Gobert shoots inside 5 feet. So
I know,
way to go,
I know,
Ronnie.
That,
pulled that right out of your
that.
Head.
I didn't say that because it was untrue.
He's been studying basketball reference, Pipe.
Oh, is that basketball?
It's like, I thought that was hockey. I thought we were in the crease.
Somebody say sports ball.
Dude.
Just somebody just
I'm not it. Doing it, man. I'm respecting
I hate it
guys.
With a white hot passion, but somebody say it. Piper, what about you vis-a-vis gesticulating wildly? Where are you at on that spectrum?
I'm different when I'm preaching versus like doing a breakout session at a conference, for example. Because of course we know I don't main stage anywhere. We've discussed this at length.
That's hard. Yeah.
Preaching, I do more of a manuscript than an outline, which then necessitates staying a little closer to whatever kind of podium is there. Not because I read it, but because I just want to keep it tight. I don't want to lose the plot. And I feel like if I'm teaching on something or doing a breakout, there's more room for interactivity. There's more like you can kind of chase a rabbit down a trail for a couple minutes and then come back to like, all right, we were on point three kind of thing. And it makes it more engaging. And also that means I can kind of use the whole space, you know? So if it's a 20-foot wide stage, I'll go 6-8 feet on either side of the podium, just kind of pace back. Because it also feels like you can make better eye contact with all parts of the room when you kind of walk towards them and then turn around and walk towards the other side. But it's two pretty different styles and comfort levels for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. There's a difference between the two things. Like if I'm doing like a teaching thing and I'm barely looking at my notes, it's like, I love that kind of interaction because it is more of a conversation than it is just a monologue. But baby, you're a pretty good combo. I think you're expressive, not overly expressive. I feel like you generally stay behind, like for a sermon, you generally stay kind of planted behind the pulpit. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is, man. I'm a podium guy for sure. So yeah, I'm staying behind the podium. You know, I'll gesture a little bit, but probably nothing crazy. Nothing crazy. I have an apparel question for preaching, and this is one that I've been rolling around for a while, and I've meant to ask you guys about it. You see this, not to take it back to sports, but you see it on sports broadcasts, but you see it on just a lot of people now. How do we feel about guys wearing like athletic shoes with suits? I think it's infantile. I think it looks absolutely ridiculous. And yet, like, real people do it. Like, real legitimate people are doing this. And I think it's just one of the dumber things I've ever, you know, witnessed in my lifetime. My question to you guys is, I feel like the pastors who are, like, doing the look at my sneakers thing, they're wearing jeans. But are we running into any pastors out there who are preaching in suits and like tennis shoes? Either of you can answer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like
fashion's a funny thing. You know, kind of, it's trendy and I think it sort of casualizes something. So it allows someone to say, hey, I'm dressing appropriately, or I'm looking like somebody who put some effort into it, but I'm also somebody that you can relate to because I got my sneakers on.
Yeah. That is absolutely ridiculous. I think we're going to, in 6 years, we're going to look back on this trend like we look at leisure suits from 1977.
Here's the thing, though. Like, we're going to feel like all fashion, and, you know, being a white guy, this is a risky thing to say, but I'm just going to go for it. There are things that black people can get away with that white people can't. Just fashion-wise, they look great on black people. Yeah. They look stupid as all get out on us. Suits and sneakers is one of those things. There's the guys who I'm thinking of, who I'm like, yeah, I don't think that looks ridiculous. All black guys, and they pull it off. Yeah. They also have way better sense of what a fashionable sneaker is, and so they put it together and they look crisp. And then you get white dudes who do it, and you're like, you look like a 6-year-old on Easter. Like,
Yeah.
Your mom exactly. puts you in a suit and you're like, all you have, and you're like, no, I'm wearing my Reebok pumps or my light up shoes or whatever. Like, that's what a white dude looks like when he's wearing a suit and sneakers.
Yeah, dude, major 6 year old at Easter vibes. That's the perfect analogy. Baby, do you want to respond to like the racial hot takes that just got thrown out by Piper?
All I can say is that January 11, 23 is the day Pipe got canceled. It's really that simple. You know?
Here's the deal. Every white dude, we can't say it out loud. Every white dude looks at the fashion sensibilities of so many black people and goes, I simply, just like we do at athletic ability and things like that for different ones. You're like, I wish I could keep up. I wish I was as good as.
I'm sorry. I love you, but speak for yourself.
Welcome to the Happy Man podcast.
I'm Ted Kluck.
You just said everybody.
Joined by my good friend and partner in radio, Jimmy the Greek Snyder.
I'm pretty secure in my fashion sense, boys. So Ronnie does Ronnie. That's
Piper. Okay.
That's true. When it comes to fashion,
I absolutely agree with what you're saying.
Well, yeah, as a longtime athlete, I know that both in both areas, you're like, man, yeah, there have been times like I wish, and it's true. And here's the thing: I talk to fellow black pastors about this, and I'm like, how do you pick what you wear? And they're just like, it looks good on me, and I'm like, it does, and it would look so dumb on me. We are in different categories. You are absolutely right, and I'm glad I'm not trying to imitate you in this area.
On this level, Pipe, I was at a college basketball game recently, and there was a white dude who was wearing the kind of tights where like one side of it goes down like all the way down one leg, and then there's no tight on the other leg. And everybody in my party agreed that like I don't even know what white dude could get away with that historically, but this kid playing for like Lee University definitely was not pulling it off.
Level of athlete makes a difference there, you know, like Tyler Hero for the Heat could probably pull it off. Jason Williams back in the day, like you look at some of those guys, you're like, yeah, they could pull it off. But again, you're talking they have reached the league, they are among the better players in the world. Sorry, Division III athlete, not you.
Exactly.
I mean, dude, there's something to be said. Like, so my hot take is just there's something to be said for anybody just dressing dressing who they are, what makes them comfortable, and is just not so self-conscious about it. You know, it's like, just wear what you wear. And, you know, it's like, it's going to fit a particular style. It's going to put you in a particular category. You just got to deal with that. And, if I'm wearing something I'm uncomfortable in, it literally affects my output. You know what I mean?
That's like it's that's so true. Yes.
It just totally does. If I'm uncomfortable, like I'm so conscious of it that like it's tweaking the way I communicate. So I got to kind of wear something that I know I'm not even going to be thinking about. I'm totally comfortable. I'm not even thinking about it. And so that I can concentrate on the task at hand. But
all right. You know. So of all the guys in our tribe, Who would be the most likely to try to pull off a suit with athletic shoes? I've got two. I've got two in mind. I think they're both sneaky. But I've got a couple, but I want to hear from you guys thinking through like people in our tribe. Who are we going to see trying to pull off the suit and sneakers deal?
I feel like KDY would do it, except he'd do it with like white walking shoes.
I had KDY. He was on my list.
Yeah. He's not done that though. I feel like
he's not going to get a pair of Jordans. He's going to wear like Etonics or Avian whatever walking sneakers.
I mean, I feel like you're giving him a lot of credit that he would even do that though. You know.
Well,
I mean?
Here's the thing about KDY though that kind of makes this make sense, because I had him too. He was on my list. KDY is sort of sports adjacent in that he follows sports, he watches sports. So he's putting in some reps with like the NFL Today pregame show, where like it's a bunch of dudes in, you know, Nikes and suits. So I could see him seeing that and having it register a little bit, which is kind of why I went there with KDY.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I got another one, but I want to hear you give one, baby.
I feel like I could maybe because I've seen him do this, but I feel like I could see. I feel like I could see Russell Moore trying to wear the sneaks with his suit. I feel like maybe I've seen that. Like,
oh, he.
New York Times would do a piece on it for sure.
I have inside input on this. He wouldn't do it with true athletic shoes. He would do it with like those sort of like patent leather, quasi sneakers, like the high top Skecher kind of brown,
like athleisure.
Exactly. They're like athletic dress shoes kind of thing.
Yeah.
100% would wear those, but not Jordans, not Yeezys, he's not a sneakerhead.
Yeah. I don't know. Who do you got in mind, T?
I've actually got at Jared C for this.
Oh, 100%.
Because I feel like he's sort of fashion adjacent in the same way that KDY is sports adjacent.
You nailed it. I think I've seen Jared C with kind of the, maybe not the full suit, but like the jacket with the casual t-shirt with slacks, but with like the Jordans or whatever.
Yeah, because Jared C will, like, from time to time, he'll pull up in like a Ramones t-shirt, and I'm just like, oh, we're being that guy. Wow, I didn't know that was in there, but. So I could see him trying to be this guy.
But I mean, Jared C is quintessential. Like, okay, so I'm obviously going to get in trouble for this, whatever. But like, Jared C he's quintessential. Like, I think, dude, that maybe quite literally does not care what he's wearing on any level. Like he wears a Ramones shirt not because he thinks it's cool, but because he loves the Ramones.
Okay,
do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's way different than being like, well,
I'm putting this outfit together.
100%. Yeah. So that dude is not putting outfits together. Mm-hmm. I mean, his mind just doesn't operate, I don't think, in that sort of like, in that terrain. You know?
Dude, let me ask you both a conceptual question along these lines. I don't know what year it started, but it was sometime in the last, let's say, decade and a half that pastors... I mean, like everything else, it probably dovetailed with social media at some level. But like, I feel like prior to 15 years ago, the word pastor and fashion didn't even appear in the same sentence. Like, it wasn't even a category, right? It was not a thing that anyone talked about, pro or con, positive or negative in any way. But now it gets talked about all the time. Do you think this is a net positive or a net negative?
Well, I think that's very tribal.
I think it's weird. Yeah.
I think the in our world, this sort of whiter reformed world, what you're saying is absolutely true. But like in the more charismatic world, in like the more there's a lot of $3,000 suits on pastors and stuff, like going back a long way.
Sure.
You know, there's sort of a whole world of like the pastor dresses the part kind of thing. Mm. That's a world that's so different than the one that any of us have spent time in recently. And again, I don't know that it was called fashion as much as more like in the same way that like a CEO wears a power suit, the pastor wears the preaching suit or whatever. It sort of had that same vibe to it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that tracks. I've got a hot take. But I want to hear you on that previous question, baby, if you got anything on it.
Yeah, I think, okay, so I agree with everything Pipe said. I think the other aspect to it is I think there's been this push, and it's more visible now because it's social, but like I think there's a push for pastors to be relevant. And there's this sense of like, oh no, the younger generation. Oh no, the younger generation. Mm-hmm. And so there's a, like, for example, so I knew a large church that hired a consulting firm to come in, tell them everything they're doing wrong, tell them how far back in the past they're still stuck. One of the dudes emerged, and this is an older guy, right? A guy that is inching,
I love where this is going.
Inching up on retirement, right?
Yeah.
And so this guy ends up going from wearing his standard tie, you know, button-down slacks outfit to jeans, sport jacket, and semi-casual shoes, right?
Okay. Wow.
So the consultant like Gate said, "Nope. If you're interested in quote unquote reaching the next generation, like this has to be one of the things that you do so that kids think that you are clued into their world a little bit, because Nothing, no kid thinks you're more clued into their world than wearing like dad jeans, old sneakers.
Dad jeans and a pair of loafers. Yeah,
exactly. So it was like, but dude, that's especially if you're older. And if, I mean, I'm getting older too, but if you're like boomer generation, especially, it's like, what, I got to do something here because I'm losing touch with the younger generation. You put all that stuff in quotes, right? But
that whole story fills me with like, deep existential
dread.
Yeah, it does. And so like kind of a serious question here. Like, I feel like that story should fill everyone with existential despair in every part of it, right? Like gigantic church, consulting firm, like telling the old guy how to dress. Like, there's nothing Christian about any of that. Like, you could have substituted mega church for like Fortune 500 company, or even like mid-sized town company, and it would have been the same story, you know. I mean, it's bizarre to me. I think I want to see a return to Schlump. I want Schlump to make a comeback. I think there's an inverse relationship between the level of pastoral fashion and probably the quality of preaching and theology. Give me Schlumpy.
Well, I mean, there's a ton of Schlumps still in existence.
Yeah, it's still going strong. Don't worry.
Schlump is alive and well, man.
I'm here for Schlumps. Well. I'm their advocate, so I'm an ally there.
But, I'm all about, so like where I land on that is just put in a little effort. That's where I land on it.
Yeah, just comb, put in a little comb effort. Your hair. Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Schlumpy pastors are like happy moms. There are a lot of them, and you just don't see them on social media. So it's
those are the people I like more of that.
The public ones are all the ones who, like, in pastor world, it's the fashionable ones, which is gross.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the moms who are like, I'm trying to overcome all these struggles and we have piles of laundry for days. Whereas like all the content moms who are like, you know what? I kind of love my kids and life's challenging sometimes. We're doing okay. They don't post about it on social media. Slumpy pastor, happy mom, same kind of category in terms of how they posture. So don't worry. Kind of. Like,
it is.
Like polo shirts and khakis, ill fitting dress shirts, you know, instead of like the perfectly slim fit, slight paunch instead of jacked. There's tons
of
those guys. They're everywhere. So,
dude, I have a friend who I know does not listen to this podcast, but I mean, he absolutely 100 fits into that category. And I'm being totally honest with y'all right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that in me. And I wish I did. This is not, this is not being some weird self-deprecating thing, nothing like that. But literally, like, he is so, that, like, literally for him to even think that he would spend more than 1 second thinking about what he's going to wear on a Sunday, like, like he just looks at me like I'm from another planet because it just does not compute for him. Like, he didn't, that's just not the person he is. And so he's just being who he is up there. And like, I'm here for it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I love it. I dig it.
Yeah.
I have a question for you guys. Cause I'm, you know, I turned 40 in a couple months. And so I feel like 40 is official middle age. You know, I don't feel old, but I'm like, I'm middle aged. I am no longer young.
You can't
cool.
fake it anymore, Pipe. That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So what does it look like? Because part of what you're describing, Ted, is people dressing their age. You know, when a guy who's when Louis Giglio dresses like a college student from 2004, you're like, come on, man, you're 67 years old.
He's got the testosterone of a 19-year-old flowing through those veins.
He's reaching the younger generation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the consulting firm did wonders for him. What does it look like for a 40-year-old to dress his age?
Well, Pipe, so here's the deal. I've been having, it's so weird you say that, dude, because I've been having convos with people about that recently. And I'm telling you, like, we're kind of done in for that, because I'll be honest with you. When you look back, when you look at pictures of my dad at 32, that dude was dressing exactly like his 70-year-old dad. And this was back like in whatever the 60s or 70s or whatever.
Right.
So fashion really has progressed. There's a reason why older people look younger. And some of it, I know we have better medicine. We got better, you know, we got all that stuff is better. So that's part of it for sure. But like fashion has really leveled itself out in the last, I would say, three decades, in the sense that like we just look young. We just literally dress younger than our parents did. So there's not a huge, like there's not like a huge fashion disparity between like a 20-year-old and a 40-year-old and a 40-year-old and a 65-year-old right now. All clothing is kind of all the same in a weird way. Leveled out.
My take on that, Pipe, is that we've market corrected too hard in the opposite direction, in that 40-year-olds, yeah, back in Ron's dad's era, 40-year-olds dressed like their 80-year-old dads, let's say. I think today 40-year-olds dress like their 17-year-old daughters, and it's ridiculous, right? So like in the self same way that I don't know, a freshman at the college where I teach, she'll wear like a super baggy sweatshirt over a pair of tights or whatever. Like that's what all the moms are wearing. And it's strange. So I think we've market corrected too hard. I think there's a dressing for your job piece that's in here too.
For sure.
Where I don't know, call me old fashioned. Like if you're a pastor, don't try to dress like, I don't know, you're in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. Like nobody's buying it. It's ridiculous. Like you're 40, you're a pastor. I don't know. Have some respect for the office, I guess. But as for how to do this well, again, and we don't spend a ton of time like in each other's presence. I feel like you do this well, Pipe. I feel like you've always dressed age appropriate.
I mean, I wear flannels and jeans like 70% of the time, and I feel like that's sort of you can go from about 20 to 60 in flannels and jeans. So.
I mean, yeah, like flannels and jeans works.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, exactly. That works when you're 85, you know. Yeah. So I think you're positioning yourself well here, Pipe, for a nice run into middle age.
But I mean, I think that's too, though. But like, you can't deny that, like, that has become a fashion staple. Like, my dad was a casual guy, but he wasn't doing flannels and jeans. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't doing something that would have kept him categorically sort of like in this classic fashion category, you know what I mean? So like that has been presented to us as an option, and I think it's a great option. I think it looks great. It's classic, you know, like back when my dad couldn't say, hey, I've just been wearing Chuck Taylors my whole life and that's just all I wear and that's its own thing. Like I can say that. I've been wearing Chuck Taylors since I got my first pair at 11. That's kind of just what I wear. But like my dad didn't have the opportunity to say that because those were basketball shoes back when he was a kid, you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. It's just like, even that, like, it's just different. There's like new categories for all that kind of stuff. I think it's actually better. I also think, to your point, Big T, is like, yeah, dude, you can. So here's a great example. Like there's certain places that I shop that I shopped at 20 years ago that like, I just don't even shop at anymore because I'm like, no, dude, that's just categorically 20 years too young for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, I just don't do it. Right. Because it's, I'm looking at it. And I'm going, I can't wear that baggy sweatshirt that says, yo, on the front. You know what I mean? Like I can't, like, I can't be ironic. Like my daughter could wear that and it would be ironic and it's fitting, but it's like, dude, you really shouldn't do that.
Yeah. 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 There's a try hard element to where, to your point. And we, Ronnie, you and I, especially, we both enjoy like self-expression probably to a fault, but you know, I like to push, like I like to make an effort. I like on some days or in some context to sort of, I don't know, say something, I guess, with what I'm wearing. And it's nothing huge, right? But it's just like, it's kind of the I don't look like everyone else flex. And however you do that flex is however you do it. But I enjoy doing that, but I don't ever want it to sort of deviate into self-caricature, you know?
Right,
and I think that's where you like get off the rails with fashion sometimes. But here's another question, boys. Actually, I got to throw in an ad break. And then on the other side of it, I've got a related question. We'll be back in 2 and 2. All right, boys, we're back. Talking about fashion, talking about growing older. Maybe we've talked about this even on the program. Now it strikes me that we may have had this conversation, but Piper, with you turning 40, this is a huge milestone. We're talking about fashion and we're talking kind of about this spectrum of basically how much should I get noticed versus how much should I just kind of recede into the background. And I asked this question of my students the other day. At what age, as a guy, do you stop being a guy? And what I mean by that is this. Like, if you're at the mall and there's a group of girls of indiscriminate age, let's say, it doesn't even matter how old they are. They could be 40, they could be 20, they could be 17, whatever. And they walk by you. Are they referring to you as a guy or a group of guys? Or are you just like now an invisible middle-aged man? And at what age does that start? Does that question make sense?
Yeah.
Because we're not guys anymore.
I think so.
Yeah. I think that ship sailed a while ago. I don't know exactly when it sailed, but we're not guys.
I think you just become old enough to be somebody's dad.
Yeah.
And then
that's what kind of moves you into that.
Yeah.
That moves you into that category where it's like, oh dude, you're.
Well, and yet this is the year in our house where, I mean, I have two teenage daughters. One of them has been a teenager for several years now, but this is the year that it feels maximally teenage in terms of she's got her license. She's out with friends all the time, full teenage life, which is great for her. And it has squarely put me in the category of just dad, which is really freeing. It's really nice to just there's a lot that goes with it. You're like, oh, I don't even have to try at certain things anymore. And you get to make dumb jokes and all. My goal is to get eye rolls out of her and that kind of thing. But I think it's also like if I was at any public place and there was any group of women, I'm like, yeah, this just dad category. And that's beige. That's background. That's part of the scenery. Yeah. That it's not so different than an employee at a place. They're just sort of there out of necessity, and occasionally they do helpful stuff.
Yeah, you're basically a fly on the wall, and it's kind of freeing actually to not have to be such a guy. I have another question on this level for each of you. What's the most like quintessentially dad thing you do? Because I've noticed, and my kids are a little bit older than yours, Pipe, but I have a 16-year-old still in the house and a 20-year-old at college. So kind of same deal. We're in that teenage, early 20s window. And I find myself kind of subconsciously doing dad things. What's the most dad thing you guys do?
Oh, man.
I got a couple.
So I got a really old kid who has a really, old boyfriend. And by old, I mean, they're both in their late 20s, mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
And, this may be because of my dad, but no, it doesn't matter. If we're all out together, I pick up the tab. You know what I mean? It's just, daddy pays. So it's like these dudes, the combined income of these dudes is like four times what I make.
Yeah.
But like dad picks up the tab. It's not even a question. My daughter would probably fall over and perish if like I didn't pick up the tab. It's like the expected thing.
Yeah.
Well, and that's
Mike,
that's not
you?
That's not just being a dad of daughters. Like my dad does that, and he has he has five grown children, all of whom are pretty well established and take care of ourselves just fine. And I mean, I don't know what our respective incomes are relative to one another, but any of us could pick up the tab, and dad gets it. And none of us bats an eye, even though we're middle-aged men. I think we are at the stage of like, turn off the lights. I'm the light switch guy. There's sort of a category of things, shut the doors, turn off the lights, put your dishes in the dishwasher, that kind of stuff. But I think the most dad thing I do is not so much those. It is, I reload the dishwasher because there's a right way to do it. And so
being a psycho about that dishwasher.
Yeah.
Dad.
So my kids unload the dishwasher because everything has its place in the dishwasher. Apparently only I know the place that everything goes. And it's a little bit like loading the car for vacation. You can kind of Tetris all the stuff
in there.
You got
a vision for that thing.
Yeah. And that's the dishwasher.
You're like James Cameron. You're directing that movie. You know how it's supposed to look.
And there's this profound and disappointing sense of satisfaction when you kind of sit back and cross your arms and you're like, I got all the dinner dishes and the cooking stuff into the dishwasher. And, and nobody cares. It's not, everybody else has walked away 15 minutes prior and has left
really
you to do the work.
Cares, Piper. Yeah. I'm glad you have that revelation.
Not even the people listening to this podcast, except for the other dads who do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. No, they care. They definitely care. Along those lines, I've become on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, whenever we do presents, like a psycho about the discarded wrapping paper going immediately into a trash bag.
Yes.
I'm that guy.
Same.
I plan ahead on that stuff. I bring the trash bag.
Oh, me too. Yeah, I bring it out. It's a part of the scene, dude. And I want to keep that room nice and tidy. And dude, the other one, and this one kills me that I do this. The kids will be like watching TV on the couch, and I'll come stand behind the couch for a couple minutes and just stand there and watch. And it drives me insane when my dad does this. And now I've started doing it and I hate myself for it.
You're just kind of brooding. You're kind of letting
standing there and
you're showing him, hey, I'm here. This, my presence is.
Yeah. My presence is here. Like you're enjoying it 30% less now, you know.
Yeah. You just ruined the room vibe. Everything was relaxed. And then it's like, everybody's tense waiting for dad to say, hey, can you get this thing out of the car, clean your room, whatever. And then you just leave and like, oh, good. That's much better.
Dad's the ruiners. The ruiners of vibes the world over.
Yeah, vibe killer. Human killer.
Here's a quest based on the first one, Big T. Yeah. This is for both of you guys. Why do dads through the years, I mean, on a general level, not every dad is like this, but why do most dads become so gosh darn efficient? Why is efficiency one of like the earmarks of like dad life? Why is that?
That's a great question. I am freakishly efficient. It's a little flex. I think just because you have to be, because when your kids are young, they're idiotic, and they're the antithesis.
When does young stop here? I'm just curious.
Yeah, exactly. We're still waiting for it.
It never does if you're a parent.
Okay.
They're like
wonderful.
They're like the opposite of efficient, right? And so I think as dads, we double down on efficiency and we're thinking thoughts like, if we're ever going to get out of this house to go anywhere, I got to step it up. I got to double down, you know? And you just do that so often day after day, you become a psycho with.
I just think that's good. I think we're always trying to, we get more comfort driven and we're always trying to pre-plan for what's going to give us the most rest.
Yeah.
You know?
And it never works, right? Because
it never works. Ever.
Something always intrudes. And it's usually the intrusion comes from somebody who's blissfully unaware and just enjoying their life. Like they come in and like wreck your evening, you know, that you worked so hard for.
That they were having such a good evening and then they stepped all over yours. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But either way, so it's funny. So to even like do work ahead of time to plan for rest later, you're still doing the same amount of work. You're just doing it at a different time. It's so funny. All we're doing is replacing. We're placement people is what.
Well, and you're putting a bunch of pressure on your rest time to deliver something that it probably can't deliver.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. I worked so hard for this. This movie has to be perfect. Like it has to be the best experience of my life. And then you're just kind of perpetually.
I think that's a phase in life thing too, though, because when you are responsible for getting your kids places, you are 100% basically being like, look, if I don't carry this load will not be carried in terms of getting out the door, getting anywhere on time, getting the car loaded, put your shoes on kids, all this stuff. Because, you know, mom is doing her own ton of heavy lifting to like make the kids be human and dressed and whatever else. And you're like, I will be the efficiency guy, which is usually working at counter purposes or at least counter attitudes to everyone else.
Totally.
It is absolutely an overcorrection from the useless psychosis of children.
Dude, hashtag dad life, man.
Boys, I'm going to be the freakish efficiency guy in the program and pose a little logistical question. Should we hop off the main show and try to do a quick Patreon? I got a hard out in 7 minutes, but we could do like a micro Patreon.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Boys, we've done what we always do on this program in that we've wandered to and fro throughout several topics. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
There's nothing in this world that he cannot do if we truly allow his love.
We can do nothing without him. Anything that we do apart from him is not something that's permanent.
All we need is grace. That's everybody. We are all broken people on our way to a place that we believe is waiting on us in heaven.
You can find more of Bridges with Monica Schmelter at lifeaudio.com.
In Christ, we are all one family.
Amen.